AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Ethos XB Insecticide Fungicide from FMC. Get serious seedling defense to defend against the toughest early season pests and diseases. Choose Ethos XB Insecticide Fungicide for at-plant defense.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us. We've got Davis back.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. All right, Davis. So last week, right at the top of the list of the headlines were that EPA released the RVOs, Renewable Volume Obligations, under the Renewable Fuels Standard. Mm-hmm. And reaction was mixed. No question about that. From the ethanol and corn side, we got a positive reaction. From the bio-based diesel and the soybean side, it was a negative reaction. Let's find out why right now from Kurt Kvorak. He is the VP of Federal Affairs for the Clean Fuels Alliance of America. Kurt, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing well. Very glad to be with you this morning.
All right. So bottom line is two very different reactions. What's the issue with the bio-based diesel proposed RVOs?
Sure. Glad to have this opportunity to explain our disappointment and our view of a missed opportunity here from EPA. So what we had come out last week was a three-year proposal, which from our perspective is positive for the industry and the biofuels industry and all folks associated with the program. What we've had in the past is just a one-year proposal, which doesn't do a whole lot to provide that certainty and market signals that we need. So they provided a proposal for 2023, 24, and 25, which is positive, but that's kind of where the positive of it ends. In fact, we're probably less eager to have a multi-year proposal now, given the fact that EPA has proposed to essentially flatline the biodiesel, renewable diesel categories in this proposal. Our industry was asking for annual increases of about 500 million gallons annually over the period of the proposal. EPA has offered 60 million gallons, then 70, and then 60 for the 3 years that they proposed, which is why I say it's essentially flatlined. The reason that we were asking for aggressive numbers and we're so terribly disappointed with what EPA has proposed is because we've seen the signals that the market is sending right now in terms of capacity buildouts in biodiesel and renewable diesel. We have an enormous amount, billions of gallons that have been announced to be coming online here over the next 12, 24, 36 months. I don't know if EPA doesn't read the news or if they're just completely that detached from reality. But once again, what EPA is essentially proposing is to set volumes for all 3 years lower than what our market capacity is for the existing year. So it would do nothing to drive new demand. It would basically ensure that EPA is behind and lower than the market for all 3 years of this proposal.
Okay. It seemed strange to me as I looked at some of the detail further, noticed that their analysis was based on February 22 production numbers, not the most current available from the Energy Information Administration. Any idea why they used data that was so old?
No, and we're digging through the rule right now. There's a lot of anomalies, I would say, in terms of different ways that EPA has decided to measure the market using data from EIA. But the fact of the matter is, you know, if you are anywhere in tune with what's happening in the agriculture industry right now, you are well aware that there's been about $4 to $4.5 billion worth of announced crush capacity expansions throughout the Midwest, both soybean and canola in Canada. To set these volumes, ignoring those signals is baffling. And so what I would say to the agriculture industry and a soybean farmer in particular, there's no guarantee that any of that soybean crush is going to be built without the proper market signals from EPA. So it's incredibly important for a farmer, particularly a soybean farmer, who cares about having value-added agriculture, who's excited about a new soybean crush facility down the road, to get engaged in this. This has important consequences for the value of a soybean for many years to come.
Yep. The RVO, the blending obligation, is not a ceiling. It's not a cap. It's a floor. With that in mind, and with the investment and enthusiasm that refiners have already shown for renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel, why will this slow down investment, in your opinion?
Well, those decisions are made when you see these announcements about a conversion of an existing petroleum refinery to renewable diesel, or a soybean crush entity deciding to announce a multi-million dollar expansion or new facility. That's all predicated upon the market drivers remaining in place. You know, whether that's tax incentives, whether that's state carbon reduction policies, including in that is the certainty and the driver from the renewable fuel standard. So there's some degree of expectation from the folks who are putting the dollars on the line that the items that have driven the market previously will continue and have some degree of upward trajectory in those calculations. I think there's a lot of folks who maybe in an RD conversion that hasn't been announced or ground hasn't broken yet, or even a soybean crush facility might be kind of thinking through that decision again today to say, wait a minute, does this make economic sense, given the fact that EPA is once again behind the curve in setting these volumes? And, you know, one of the most complex or hard to fathom components of this is, you know, this administration has been almost singularly focused on addressing climate change and reducing carbon emissions in every area of the economy they possibly can. Yeah. And here they are basically fumbling the football when it comes to some of the most aggressive in terms of carbon reduction. Our fuel is 72% less carbon emitting than petroleum diesel. To not double down on this policy and recognize what's happening in the industry and say, hey, we want to lead in this area, it's hard to understand.
Yeah. Yeah. No, boy, I'm all with you on that. It was kind of, head scratching to why the administration with their all in effort on climate wasn't taken into account on this particular effort. Now, the renewable diesel efforts going forward, incentives going forward, you mentioned the state rules, regs, programs. I'm thinking of California's low carbon fuel standard, among others. Isn't that where the real drive is for the renewable diesel?
It's part of it. There's certainly, you know, it's complex in terms of what's happened in the industry, but the COVID pandemic and what it did in reduced demand for fuels, I think it prompted a lot of refineries who were not well suited, maybe geographically challenged, didn't have access to crude, you know, a decision that they may have made to shut down that refinery or convert it over the next 10 years. I think the pandemic sped that up. So we have a lot of stranded assets. We have a lot of environmental justice and ESG commitments that are placed on some of these companies in their boardrooms and by shareholders. Combine that with federal policies on the tax incentive and the RFS, along with state and regional carbon initiatives. There's a whole host of reasons why these decisions are being made. I don't think that, you know, just a flatlining of the RVOs is going to mean that we're going to do a 180. But it's certainly going to slow down and call into question a lot of those investments that otherwise would have been a slam dunk. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what we want. I mean, our motivation here is to get as much feedstock and low carbon fuels as we can, not to mention it's domestically produced. When we're suffering from a global energy crisis because of what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, just the added benefit of a domestic energy source should be worthwhile enough to say, let's double down on this policy, not to mention the carbon benefits.
Gotcha. So this opens up the comment period. Is there a rough draft of what the Clean Fuels Alliance plans to suggest to improve the proposed RVOs?
Not yet. We've got a lot of work to do over the next 60 days. The proposal itself was about 650 pages long. We've got a public hearing that EPA is hosting in January, just after the first of the year, around January 10th, and then comments will be due by February 10th, with hopefully a decision on this by midsummer. So we're gonna be studying this. We got a lot of work to do to put together some data to defend our position. We're gonna be educating a lot of our industry stakeholders, as well as our champions on the Hill, to go to bat for us. So it's key to do the homework, get it right, and make the most compelling argument you can to EPA at the end of the day.
Yeah, it and at least the argument or the education effort is at EPA, because with all the new faces in the House, if this was a congressional effort, it would feel overwhelming. But because this is EPA's first chance at the RVOs outside of congressional direction, this feels like there is a real opportunity for the comments to have an influence on the final rule. Yes or no?
Absolutely. That, coupled with the fact that they're doing it for multiple years, I think EPA is, you know, they're desperate to get it right. So we're hopeful that at the end of the day, they will get it right.
Kurt, let's stay in touch on this, because as time goes on and we get a better understanding of what the industry collective comments sound like, I think this is going to be very important to follow going forward. Kurt, thank you so much.
Happy to be with you. Happy holidays to you and your listeners. Always glad to be with you.
Excellent. That's Kurt Kovarik from the CFA.